From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, Zach Rosenblatt from the Arizona Daily Star, bringing you a very special episode of the Wildcast. We're road tripping to El Paso. Me, Michael Lev, and Greg Hansen are all in the car right now. We got about 4.5 hours to go. Greg Hansen got his apple juice box from McDonald's, and Michael and I feasted on some sandwiches. And you guys excited for this long road ahead?
Excited for the road trip or the game or I don't know. This is sort of fun. It's different. You know, here with my pals from the Arizona Daily Star doing a podcast in the car, talking a little Arizona Wildcats football. Sure, why not?
It's better than changing planes at the Las Vegas Southwest Terminal.
Yeah. Have you ever done this trip before, Greg?
I've driven to the Sun Bowl 3 times over the years, and I've driven to Deming twice this summer on the way to Colorado, so I know the way.
We're stopping at Deming, aren't we?
Nobody stops there except to get gas.
I think we're having lunch in Deming. So
yeah, like the House of Pies or something.
We'll have a follow-up mini-podcast with a review.
A food review.
From Elisa's House of Pies. We'll talk about that on Monday maybe, Zach, assuming we survive this trip.
Yes. I mean, Michael has his Nickelback CD loaded up, so I don't know how long we're going to last.
True. Fake news.
But yeah, you know, the game is tonight, actually. We're doing this podcast on a game day, which is weird. I mean, we've talked to death about the Houston game, but obviously Arizona can't lose this game, right? Like, is Rich Rodriguez fired this weekend if they lose this game?
I mean, people have kind of joked about how if they were to lose this game that we could have a tarmac situation, which is a reference to, you know, Lane Kiffin being fired on the tarmac at LAX. Like, you know, you wouldn't Classic be welcomed moment. Back to Tucson. No, they cannot lose this game. I mean, my question is, if they don't win it by enough, is there going to be an uproar? When we get to the final score prediction segment, I'll be interested to see what everyone thinks about what's going to happen. But if the optics aren't good in this national TV game against maybe one of the worst teams in the country, people are not going to be happy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Greg, if they don't win this game, if they win this game by 14 points, is that as good as a loss pretty much?
I think it is. I think the perception will be so bad that next Friday night's game against Utah would probably draw fewer than the first two home games.
Oh, man. So like in the 30,000s?
UTEP is historically bad. 50 years, one of the worst 3 or 4 programs in the country, FBS teams. And I don't know why Arizona would schedule home and home with UTEP in the first place.
Seems like a lose-lose situation.
It's one of the reasons why they haven't played them in 14 years is because no one's going to go watch the game when UTEP plays.
I think it probably says something about the state of Arizona that the best NFL prospect in this game, and I've said this to Michael, the best NFL prospect in this game is on UTEP. He's an offensive lineman named Chris Hernandez, and he's been talked. I saw him talked about as like a top round pick, where Arizona is like, okay, Demetrius Flanagan Foles looks physically like an NFL player, and we think Alsidek maybe is a prospect, but other than that, like, there's no. I just feel like that says a lot about the state of the programs, right?
The UTEP drew 19,000 people last week for their home opener. There's a million people in El Paso. They drew 19,000.
Arizona basketball would fill that out better if they played at that stadium.
Because, you know, El Paso has historically supported the Sun Bowl in great numbers, 40 to 50,000 every Sun Bowl, and yet minor football home games usually average about 23,000. I looked it up.
That's a tough program to recruit to, I would guess. I mean, obviously you're going to get some of the local kids from El Paso. I was looking at their roster. It seems like there are a lot of locals on there. 26, okay. But otherwise, you know, I haven't heard great things about El Paso. No offense to the fine folks of southwestern Texas, but you know, who's going to want to play for that school in sort of a middling conference USA? I guess, you know, playing in the Sun Bowl Stadium, maybe that's cool. But, I mean, there's no tradition. They haven't won lately. That's a tough sell. I mean, if you think Arizona's a tough sell, imagine trying to recruit to UTEP.
I was going to say, I mean, you can just look at Tristan Cooper as an example of this. He up at Arizona hadn't even offered him. They didn't even know who he was until, like, January before signing day. His only offers were from, like, UTEP and Texas State. He, like, really didn't want to stay home and go to UTEP. He wanted to go somewhere else. He got an offer from Illinois. He didn't want to go there. It was too far away. Then Arizona came in, and as soon as they offered, he's like, he told his dad, he's like, I know I'm going here. So, I mean, if a kid who lives in your backyard doesn't want to play for you, I mean, Arizona, I guess, deals with that in Tucson quite a bit, especially recently.
I think one of the saddest things about UTEP's athletic program is that they've been in the Mountain West Conference / WAC for almost 50 years, and then the Mountain West Conference basically ditched them, got rid of them. All their quote, traditional rivals, New Mexico, Wyoming, Colorado State, dumped them.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They were in the Mountain West previously.
Is that right? Is that right, Greg?
You know, I don't think they went in when the Mountain West formed, so the WAC dumped them, right?
Yeah. Oh, the WAC did, okay.
Does the WAC still exist?
Yeah, there's like nobody
it exists
relevant
in there.
In basketball, right? Not in football. Okay.
Grand Canyon is in it.
It's really hard to keep up with all these conferences these days.
Yeah, especially with the major teams realignment. Like, it still confuses me that Maryland's not in the ACC anymore. Like,
the late, great SVP and Russillo radio show had this segment occasionally. They would call it Who's In It? And it was just a reference to, like, you trying to figure out what teams are in what conferences. You know, speaking of which, in our Pac-12 power rankings this week, Zach, I actually moved Arizona up from number 10 to number 9, and I moved Cal down because I was just really disappointed that Cal, you know, kind of needed to come down to the last minute to beat Weber State at home. And I know Greg Hansen did not show a lot of respect for the performance against Houston, but I thought it was a game they could have, should have won against a decent team with a great player who was kind of blowing up their offense every other play. A lot of encouraging signs, I thought, from that game. Obviously, the quarterback situation is the elephant in the Chevy Traverse that we're driving across Arizona right now.
We almost had to do a pickup truck, though.
We did almost
a little fiasco at the rental place.
There was a little something going on there, but
something straight out of Seinfeld.
Let me get your guys' thoughts as we head toward El Paso here. The quarterback situation, Brandon Dawkins. You know, where are we at with this thing? Well, where do you think it's headed? What do you need to see tonight that might, you know, maybe change your mind about things?
I'm really concerned about it. And I know Dawkins was beat up. I know his dad told you that he had all these different things going on. His hand was swollen and that there was that big hit at the end of the game. But even so, like, he's just still making the same mistakes that he's been making the last 2 years when he's played. And that if you've been in the system for 4 years and you're still making the same mistakes, I just don't think there's any reason to think that you're going to get any better. And I think we all agree that Khalil Tate's just not ready yet. So that leaves a big, very big question mark. And, you know, Jamari Joyner is, I think they're kind of banking on him coming in next year, and I'm not entirely convinced he's going to. So, weirdly, the quarterback position went from something that we maybe thought had really good depth and, you know, maybe was one of their deepest positions on the roster to where you don't know who the future of that position is on this team.
I watched not all the high school highlight tapes of Khalil Tate about a year ago, and I thought, my impression was, wow, Arizona got this kid, and then when he gets here, you realize he can't pass. That's why they got him. So, I mean, do they have a complete quarterback? Like most schools do. Winning schools do. Brandon Dawkins has been there long enough that he should be more advanced, I believe. I know it's a very tough position to play. But there's problems, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rich Rod has made a career out of, like, finding these athletes in high school who are, you know, other schools don't want to recruit them as a quarterback. But Rich Rod gives him a chance, and he kind of turns lemons into lemonade. But maybe his magic is kind of running out. Maybe it's because, you know, I mean, Khalil Tate's still young. There's still a lot of chance there. But if Khalil Tate's not ready right away and Dawkins doesn't get any better, then Rich Rod's not going to be around to see the development of Khalil Tate. So
we don't know if Khalil's healthy,
which is also an important thing.
You know, Arizona's luck in this regard has been so bad the last couple years with multiple guys getting hurt at the same position.
But also, as you've said to me multiple times, health is a skill also.
It is. And there's also, you know, the issue of the offense that they run. I mean, guys are going to get banged up when you run your quarterback. And Brandon and Khalil are both very competitive, aggressive runners.
Khalil's trying to truck dudes over left and right, yeah.
So it's not that surprising. I wonder, too, about Khalil is he loves to freelance, you know? I mean, that one play he made in the game where he kind of he pivoted to his left to get away from the pass rush and ran downfield for a first down. I mean, that stuff's awesome, but I'm sure it's difficult for the coaches to accept that this is the kind of play that they're going to get out of their quarterback, someone who's maybe not going to necessarily go 1-2-3 through the progression. He's going to kind of freelance and improvise. It's fun to watch. It creates a lot of big plays, but you know, from a coaching standpoint, I can kind of see why they might want to go with someone who would actually execute the offense the way they have it designed.
Yeah. I read Bruce Arians' book this week, the Arizona Cardinals coach, and the name of the book is Quarterback Whisperer. And, you know, he's coached many of the top quarterbacks in the NFL in the last 25 years. If you ever get a chance, read his chapter on accuracy. He goes into detail about you're never going to be able to teach a quarterback accuracy if he doesn't have it already. It was just absorbing, that whole chapter. And I thought, man, he wrote this whole chapter about Arizona's quarterbacks. It was really good. And he also talked about read option quarterbacks are so incomplete. They really don't know how to read the field. And they can only do the read option stuff. So
yeah, you might as well have written that chapter about Arizona's quarterback situation right now.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that Greg Hansen's able to read a book in a week. When was the last time you read a book in a week?
I don't know the last time I read a book, to be honest.
Well, I skipped the parts on the NFL stuff and read about his upbringing and the accuracy stuff.
I mean, that's all relevant to everything you're covering right now. So, yeah. But yeah,
it sure is. So, besides the quarterback play, which I mean, we could spend the entire road trip talking about this if we wanted to. Is there anything else? Any other areas that you guys feel like Arizona really needs to improve upon? I know that in your podcast on Wednesday, Greg, you're talking a lot about the lack of playmakers on offense. It's hard for me to compare what they have now to what they've had in the past because I wasn't here to see it firsthand. But do you feel like, Greg, that there's a dearth of playmakers compared to recent Arizona teams or ones that you've covered over the years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, their receiving group, Sean Brown's their top receiver. I mean, shouldn't he be your third receiver or fourth receiver?
Yeah, I was even thinking, you know, in Rich Rod's first couple of years, he had a guy like Johnny Jackson who would be like the number two receiver on this team, and he was a walk-on. Like, don't you agree with that? Like,
you know, if you go back to the last disaster season, 2003, when everybody got fired, Arizona had just lost all their playmakers like Bobby Wade and Dennis Northcutt. They had no playmakers. And when you get to the Pac-12 season, you've got to have guys who can do something in the clutch and make yards and touchdowns.
In that vein, Zach, I mean, do you feel like maybe we're going to see a little bit more of Nathan Tilford and maybe even your guy, Gary Brightwell, playing in the slot? I mean, we've heard so much about those guys in training camp, and we really haven't seen very much of them at all as far as, you know, playing on offense.
I know you've asked a bit about Nathan Tilford this week, and they said as the season goes on, he'll get more carries. It doesn't make any sense to me why he hasn't gotten more touches so far, honestly. They don't have anybody who looks like him on the roster. I know it was NAU, but, I mean, he touched the ball and he ran it 65 yards, I think, his first carry against NAU. And, I mean, Gary Brightwell, too, hasn't even really played, like, on special teams a little bit, right?
Special teams, that's it. And he got in at the end of the NAU game as a slot receiver.
Yeah.
Maybe this UTEP game, if things get out of hand,
where they can test it out a little bit.
Tryout. Yeah, in the second half to just see what these guys can do, get them some reps.
I think it would be a mistake if it wasn't. I mean,
don't you have to have some kind of power football capability? Straight ahead, move the guys off the ball with a guy like Nathan Tilford? When your running game is little jittery guys who have to get outside, can you compete in the Pac-12 with that?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean,
isn't the strength of Arizona's team its offensive line?
I agree completely, and Nathan Tilford is that guy. I mean, he can be the thunder to
J.J. Taylor's
lightning or Nick Wilson's lightning. I mean, Nick Wilson's he can kind of run inside and outside.
But health is an issue.
But a perfect complement to J.J. Would be Nathan Tilford. I mean, not only is he just big and strong, but he, you know, I was watching him pretty closely in those open practices we had. He's got a lot of little subtle moves in traffic, able to twist his body, get small in the hole, as they say, even though he's a big guy. I came away really impressed. We also saw him catching the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably 6'2 and 200 pounds, all muscle, and he's fast. I mean, he's a guy that Arizona does. I mean, I talk a lot about their recruiting and how they've missed on these highly ranked guys, but he's a guy that Arizona just doesn't get. Like, he had a USC offer in eighth grade, and, like, yeah, I mean, like I said, he just looks like a guy they've never had before. I just, you know, Rich Rod has all this love for Zach Green, and I don't really understand it. I know he's a senior, but I think at this point you know what you're getting with Zach Green, and Nathan Tilfer might be as good as Zach Green right now. I just don't understand why he hasn't gotten the ball more.
They've played freshmen on defense.
Exactly, yeah.
They've had no qualms doing that, but we really haven't seen it much on offense so far, at least not in meaningful situations. So maybe that'll change tonight.
I mean, I was sorry to cut you off, Greg, but I was thinking, like, have you ever had a Rich Rod team where there's, you could argue that there's more, like, young talent on the defense and more, like, excitement for the future on this defense than on the offensive side of the ball, right? Like, wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, when Greg was talking about the playmaker situation on the podcast Wednesday, I was thinking, you know, you can't solve every problem in one recruiting class.
Yeah.
You know, and they devoted so many resources to defense in that class, as well as, you know, coaching staff resources the last couple of off seasons, that you're seeing the effects of it. You know, all the promising young talent is on display on defense, and you're sort of in that rebuilding phase on offense a little bit, with maybe, you know, some guys who aren't ready yet, some veteran guys who aren't up to the caliber that Arizona fans are used to.
Yeah. I guess on that note, we can jump ahead to some predictions, I'm thinking. Before we even predict the score, I actually wanted to ask you guys, a week from now, do you think Brandon Dawkins is the starting quarterback? Like, do you think Khalil Tate takes over after this week? Like, what's your thought
on
where we're at a week from now?
If I were a betting man, I would say it's still going to be Brandon Dawkins.
Okay, then how many weeks until you think it's not him, if that happens?
Here's the scenario. Brandon plays well tonight because it's UTEP, and, you know, he knows he's kind of fighting for his job. He looks good. He keeps the job. Khalil Tate still isn't 100%. And then we see what happens against Utah. And if it's a major struggle against Utah, they get blown out in that game, you have a bye the next week, I think that's where you explore making a quarterback change, whether that's Khalil Tate, whether that's Rhett Rodriguez, whether it's Donovan Tate. Maybe it's just kind of reopen the quarterback competition and, you know, see how things play out. But that bye week comes at an opportune time if you want to go ahead and make a quarterback change.
Yeah. I know, Greg, you mentioned the possibility of Rhett starting in your Mr. Football. I mean, a year ago, could you have imagined that we'd be even talking about this, that, you know, maybe Rhett Rodriguez starts a quarterback as a true freshman?
Only in a disaster scenario. And I talked to Jeff Skurin this week, and he told me, and I'd never heard this, that Stanford wanted Rhett Rod. Now, do you believe that?
No, I don't. I like Rhett a lot, but I don't see that.
Well, he could have been a preferred walk-on up there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I guess if you look at it like that, yeah.
Yeah, he's a guy you want in your program, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's smart, yeah.
He's a great quote, too, by the way. I wouldn't be opposed to him
being the press conference guy.
Just because he's a really good interview subject, just kind of how I base all of my personnel decisions as a reporter. Brandon Dawkins is a good talker, too.
Yeah,
and he likes doing it. Yeah. He does like doing it. He's had a very good attitude, too, about everything, every point. He's always been positive. I really do like the way he's handled himself amid, you know, a lot of strife here as the starting quarterback for the Wildcats.
Yeah. All right. On that note, we'll go to game predictions. You got to tell me who you think's going to win and give me a little short explanation why. You go first, Greg.
I think Arizona wins 45-17. This is kind of window dressing to what lies ahead. Next week, big boy football begins. UTEP got beat by Rice, which lost 62-7 to Stanford. And I don't think Stanford's as good as it has been. So I just think this is like your final spring training baseball game before you open against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium.
All right, Michael, what you got?
Yeah, I love Greg's transitive property kind of thing yeah. that he was doing over there. Because if you if you really extrapolate it out, they lost to Rice, 31-14, which lost to Stanford 62-7, which just gave up 600 yards of offense to USC. So that just shows you how bad UTEP is. That being said, I have Arizona winning 38-20. Not beating the spread, maybe a little bit of a closer game than people think, and a couple reasons for that. I think UTEP, as bad as they are, I mean, this is a desperation situation for them to at least show some degree of respectability. I know they've got a lot of injuries on top of everything else, but I think they're at least going to show up and be fired up for the game. And also, you know, when you have freshmen who've never played a road game, I know it's not exactly like going to Death Valley or going to Baton Rouge or whatever, but still, it's a little different on the road. There are bound to be some mistakes made by these young guys here and there over the course of the game. So maybe a little bit closer
than
people
too.
Think. National TV, a comfortable win, but not a complete blowout.
Yeah, you know, I've been going back and forth how much I think Arizona's going to score. I guess I'll settle on, I think they're going to get more than 50 points. So I'll say 56-17. I just think UTEP's just not very good. I can't imagine their defense is very good. Arizona, if they don't score a lot of points, then I think that's kind of going to be a sign of things to come in the next couple weeks. But I mean, if we're not talking again on Monday about Arizona, just if we're not just looking ahead to Utah after today, and we're just like forgetting about this game, because I don't know how much we'll be able to take away unless it's a close game, I think that's a bad sign. So I guess we'll end on that note, and then I'll jump over to the Twitter mailbag, and Michael and Greg will help me out with that. All right, now on to the Twitter mailbag. Remember to send in the questions for the mailbag and get on the Friday podcast. Just tweet #AskBlatt. We'll get some questions. After the mailbag, we'll jump to an interview Ryan had with Brandon Dawkins earlier this week, where he was pretty honest about things going on and the state of where he is at and his health and stuff. But we'll jump to that in a little bit. But first, let's get some Twitter mailbag. I have Michael and Greg here for the first time to help me out, so I'm not just alone with my dog in my condo anymore. So that's good. We'll start out with our boy Justin at Justin Esports, our newest online producer. He asked, do you plan on stopping in New Mexico to get any green chilies? Might as well, right?
We're going to stop in New Mexico. I don't know if we're going to get green chilies or not, right?
Well, we're planning to stop at this place. I think, what is it called? Elisa's House of Pies. And they supposedly have great fried chicken and barbecue. So I don't know if that's going to be a green chili place. But I feel like, Zach, we got our fill of genuine New Mexico green chilies when we were in Albuquerque.
You and I walked away big fans, yeah.
We did, yeah. No offense to...
We're going to have a question that touches on this in a little bit,
no
actually.
No offense to the fine folks in Tucson or in Arizona or in Texas or wherever, but, man, I thought that was maybe the best Mexican food I've had.
We got a question coming up that you're going to be able to touch on that soon.
All right.
You a fan of green chilies, Greg?
No, but I've driven through Hatch, New Mexico twice this summer. Actually, four times this summer going and coming. And it's 40 miles from Deming. And once you get there, you realize there's something special. I mean, it's all green.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, isn't it called Hatch Green Chili? Isn't that like one of the...
Oh, yeah, that's why the town exists.
That's funny.
You know, you can get that at Trader Joe's, Zach.
They sell Sadie's salsa there, too.
Yeah. Do they?
Well, the Hatch
Valley Green Chili Salsa is a regular accompaniment to my breakfast scrambles
really?
And so forth at the Lev household. So.
Chef Lev?
Chef Lev, yeah. No, usually it's my wife doing the cooking and
still
me
Chef
just adding
Lev,
the salsa at the
still
end.
Still applies. Chef
Lev. That's true.
All right, yeah, and then we got also another star employee. We're just filled with our friends today. At PJ Brown 09, that's PJ Brown. She asked, what's it like on a road trip with Greg and Michael? How long do you get on each other's nerves? And who brings the Cheetos? What's it like? It's still too early to judge.
It is too early. Yeah, we're, what, about an hour or so into this thing?
Yeah, I feel like if anybody's going to get on other people's nerves, it's probably myself, I'm going to be honest. And nobody brought Cheetos. Michael's driving, so I feel like he was in charge of snacks. And
we
failed in that
we
regard.
We stopped at McDonald's on the way out. You know, we had our Egg McMuffins. Greg had his juice box. I brought waters for everybody.
Okay, I didn't know that. That's
so
new information.
I did not bring snacks.
All right, five-star Uber driver.
Next time. But, I think we're going to be okay. But then again, you know, maybe we're jinxing it here by saying that, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Greg is very difficult to get along with, so.
All right, next question is a softball one. So Michael won't be able to contribute here, but Greg
talk
and I...
talk about my own softball exploits.
Nobody
want.
Wants to know about
okay.
those.
Okay, all right.
At WritingEZ99 asked, as fall ball approaches for Arizona softball, what's the mood around the program? is that last game still lingering? And then as a follow-up, he asked if last season was the best chance Kendrea had to bring home championship number 9 since 2010. I think the mood is still pretty good. They brought in a pretty good recruiting class. I think their biggest question is still the pitching staff. They didn't bring in any transfers like I thought they would. So right now all they have is Taylor McQuillan and then a bunch of freshmen. So I think that's a concern, but I think their offense is still going to be really good. I mean, what's kind of your thought on the state of the softball program right now, Greg?
I know the two freshmen, Bowen from L.A. and Gilmore from the Denver area, one of them's going to have to be good, or Arizona can't contend, can't go to the World Series, can't even think about it. The other thing about softball, you know, this summer Arizona made Mike Andrea apparently the highest paid coach in college softball.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
So yesterday, Oklahoma made Patty Gasso a $925,000 a year contract, so she almost doubles Andrea.
So then Dave Hickey's gonna have to come right back, right?
But did you do for any of your top 10 lists this summer, Greg, the most heartbreaking losses in Arizona history? I've read many of them. I'll admit I didn't read all of them. But yeah, did that softball loss make the top 10?
Oh yeah.
That was bad.
I didn't do it because I didn't want to overflow with U of A basketball marks losses. Or a Rose Bowl connected loss. But I think you're right, that softball game sent by Zach. At the top, also.
Especially just because, like, the way that game went, like, Arizona was, they were down for most of it, right? And then they came back and went ahead, and then they put in O'Toole at the end, and then O'Toole, who hadn't given up runs all year, gave up like a home run or whatever, and then, man, I've never seen players so sad because this was their year. Like, Kendrea had been building up to this year, like, for a few years, right?
Almost 10 years.
I mean, going off, were you a little surprised when you saw the length of his contract extension? I mean, I know he loves softball, and I'm not sure what he would do except for watch Yankees, but, I mean, I thought maybe he was getting near retirement, right?
Yeah, although when you get older like I am, you realize...
What are you going to do?
unless you can golf every day or something you really like, why would you retire?
Kendrea does golf a lot, right?
In the summer, I think in July, he does.
You ever golfed with him?
No, but about 15 times he said, let's get together and golf.
He's busy just getting the top 5 recruiting class every year. Oh, okay. All right. Let's get to another question.
What do you got for us, Zach?
What do we got? Okay, this is the one I just touched on before. At DTayez22 asked if hashtag AskBlatt lived in El Paso and had to choose between Mexican, New Mexican, and Tex-Mex food. Which would he choose?
Oof.
I don't have as much experience with Tex-Mex, to be honest, so I can't really factor that in, but is your answer New Mexico?
I mean, I would say New Mexican food would be number one, followed by, you know, maybe sort of traditional Sonoran-style Mexican, and Tex-Mex number three. I know the people of Texas have a lot of pride in their Tex-Mex cuisine, but, I mean, let's face it, it's kind of an Americanized version of Mexican food, right?
Which is Texas in a nutshell.
So I would just automatically put that at the bottom. Now, if we're talking barbecue... I mean, that's a whole other conversation. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Texas is way out in front, of anywhere else in the country.
It's like hard to have barbecue in some other, besides, like, I guess Tennessee is still the South.
But. It is. I went to a place when the baseball was at Texas Tech, kind of out in the boonies, and I wish I could remember the name of the place. I'm sorry that I can't, but there was a line out the door, about a 45-minute wait at lunch in the middle of nowhere, Texas.
Yeah.
Totally worth it, though. It was delicious.
Well,
if I weren't driving right now, I would look it up, but I don't want to, I don't want to risk crashing
it.
And we would lose like 3/5 of the Star Sports down here, so.
I mean, I went to Austin for my brother's bachelor party. They have one famous place called Franklin's, which you have to like camp out for hours, and like it becomes a whole thing where everybody's drinking in line and stuff like that. We didn't end up going to that one. The Airbnb we were at was right by this other famous one called La Barbecue. You know, we got there still at like 11 a.m. waiting in line for a little bit. It was as much barbecue I was ever eating in my life. It was delicious, and then we all just kind of napped the rest of the day. That's how intense it was.
The place I went to, it was about 15 minutes away from where Texas Tech is. They had free beer in the cooler, which I think I tweeted at the time, and Greg Hansen kind of got excited about that idea, but. You know, it's like, come for the free beer, stay for the barbecue is kind of the concept of that place.
You a big...
Was that in Salt Lake City? No, just kidding.
No.
You a big barbecue or Tex-Mex fan, Greg?
Clam chowder, yeah.
So then better clam chowder, Seattle or Boston?
Or San Francisco.
Or San Francisco, yeah.
West Coast.
You're all West Coast, huh?
West Coast.
Interesting. I love the seafood in Boston. I'm a big fan over there. But
West Coast chowder guy, Greg Hansen.
Yeah, that's a hot take, maybe. I don't know. Our friend Zach Clark asked me, why do you spell your name that way? That would be because it's the correct way to spell it. Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell spelled it that way. UTEP's quarterback that's going to be starting this weekend spells it that way.
Zach,
I think he might be pretty good. UTEP might
Greenlee,
win, actually.
I believe, is the name of the backup quarterback.
I think
quarterback
UTEP might be win starting. Because of that. Like, if they win, we're going to point to the spelling of his name, in my opinion.
That's a note for you there, Zach, or a rail item or something.
It's something for me, I think. It's just for me.
It's just maybe for your personal blog.
All right, then we got a couple of depressed Arizona fans in a row here to close it out. I'll just ask both of them because they're kind of similar. At AZ Wildcat for Life said, name a good coaching candidate who can make Arizona consistently competitive and wouldn't be looking for the next best job. And R. Baron, 1856, asked, if Arizona doesn't beat Utah or Colorado, does the early signing period come into play with the head coaching decision? I'll answer the second one first. I think that's an interesting part of this that people maybe are forgetting a little bit, because the early signing day is December 22nd. Or it's like 3 days, starting December 22nd. So
might be December 20th, actually. Yeah. I think it's the 20th through the 22nd.
So, like, in theory, you can't wait to fire Rich Rod until after the season, because then the signing day is right there, or you can't wait until after signing day because most schools will let guys out of their letters of intent after they fire a coach. So you want to get a new coach in as early as you can, so we can get started. I mean, nobody really knows how this early signing period is going to go. Some coaches are recruiting as if it's the only one. I've heard from other people who think that's kind of being overblown and guys aren't going to sign right away. But I think that certainly has to factor into Dave Hickey's equation, right?
The unintended consequences, as Rich Rod likes to call it, with a lot of these NCAA rules, I think that's a huge one that they didn't factor in, is the college football season is still going. As you mentioned, you're going to want to have your coaching staff in place with, I would say, at least 3 weeks to spare to scramble together, keep together your recruiting class. So how does this work? I mean, a lot of times you're poaching coaches from other programs too. So you're not only, you know, you're getting rid of your coach maybe in the middle of the season, but you're taking a coach away from another program in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to see how that happens, if it happens to Arizona or Arizona State. You know, both of the schools in our state are maybe in a similar situation. Gosh, if ASU
and NAU is going to have a new coach too.
NAU will have a new coach too. As far as the new coaching candidates or possible replacements for Rich Rod, I'm going to defer to Greg Hansen on that one.
Not in
my best interest as the beat writer
specifically to be talking about that. For a guy who's not going to look for a bigger job in a few years. So is there any name that jumps to mind of someone who, if you did a good job, you could be here for 10 years? Like, is there? I know it's a weird question because we're right in the middle of the season. But.
Troy Calhoun of Air Force. That's the guy I would say right now. And, of course, it could change by this afternoon.
Fun offense, which I know Ryan's talked a lot about. You might as well get an offense like that who runs every play or whatever, right?
And I've only been around him once, and that was when Air Force played in Arizona Bowl.
Yeah, you interviewed him too, Michael, didn't you?
I did. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting man.
We've been tricked before.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, he is an Air Force guy. He went to the academy. You know, he's a service academy guy through and through. So I don't know if it would be appealing for him to leave that situation. I do know from doing a little bit of research, on that school, and I wrote a story about the challenges that they have in recruiting, that going from there to Arizona, I feel like you'd have more resources. You'd have a bigger pool of players to choose from. So
and you
I think
make more
in
money.
That regard, you make more money. In that regard, I feel like it is appealing a little bit.
All right. We'll close the mailbag at that note. And then we'll jump ahead to an interview Michael had earlier this week with Brandon Dawkins.
He's obviously a very positive type of person, it seems like. How were you feeling in the immediate aftermath of the game Saturday night?
You know, you don't feel good after a loss. You never feel good. Obviously, you want to move on and move past it. But, you know, immediately following, you know, you just feel like, as for me, you know, I feel like I let my guys down, let my team down. Certain situations where I should have made plays, where I didn't make plays. But just gives time to build, you know. Far from a finished product, and always got something to work on, and just got to put, you know, nose back down to the grind and just get back to work.
So you blamed yourself?
I mean, if whenever there's a play to be made and I don't make a play, I always feel like it's on me because in this offense, the quarterback is called upon to do just about everything. You're making a read on every single play. There's no plays where you're just a robot and you can just, you know, run the offense. You can't be a robot in this offense. You have to be able to execute on all cylinders. You have to be able to read coverage, you know, defensive line, read everything, leverage everything. So anytime I'm out there on offense and we're not putting points on the board, I feel like that's on me.
You found a nice rhythm there for a little bit. What was kind of working for you during that time?
Nothing. I mean, just seeing everything and executing. It was there all game. We just had to execute, and a few throws I wish I could have gotten back, but you just got to move on and move past it and keep going. So, you know, nobody on offense or anywhere on the team, nobody was feeling let down or anything throughout the game. You know, everybody stayed really into it, and, you know, everybody was lifting each other up. So, you know, you never feel counted out. So you just keep pushing and keep working.
So there were a handful of throws in that Houston game that you missed that were overthrows.
Mm-hmm.
When you look back at the film or review those plays, is there something mechanically that's a little bit off that's causing that to happen? What do you think is going on in those plays?
Not really an excuse, but, you know, being a little bit banged up, you know, hand and leg, you know, just trying to work through that. You know, the competitor in me never wants to sub myself out. Sometimes it may be for the best of the team, but the competitor that's inside of me just never wants to not be on the field when my guys are out there competing. So, you know, being a little banged up and, you know, just losing mechanics is more so than trying to fix things. So, you know, you get injured and try to overcompensate different ways. So trying to overcompensate and do more than I needed to on certain plays and ended up, you know, just being misconnections.
The one right before the one in the end zone, which is the one everyone's kind of been talking about, you got hit really hard in that play, right?
Somebody noticed. yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not an excuse. You know, you get hit, got banged up pretty good. Just, you know, could have subbed out or could have done a lot of things. But the competitor in me wants to be out there and compete and, you know, win with my guys. So try to battle through it, but ended up just not being able to connect on that play.
So how are you feeling today?
Feeling good. Nothing. There's nothing. No serious injuries. Everything was just, you know, minor little things that, you know, hurt at the time. So, nothing minor. Got treatment. Feeling better, and just back on the, you know, back to the grind. Getting back to it.
So, Richard was talking about working on fundamentals starting Sunday. What are some of the things that you've been just trying to hone in on to make sure that you've got those things down?
Just a lot of the little things. You know, a lot of the little things that you overlook. You know, with quarterback, there's so much that goes into it. So, there's just a lot you can overlook and, you know, not think about, especially being older. You know, when you're young and they're preached to you every day, then it's something you get used to. But you get to this level and you're kind of more fine-tuned into your mechanics. So your coaches aren't really tweaking your mechanics as much. So you're not thinking about some of the small things. But, you know, we've been just back to square one and just building it from the ground back up and feeling really good about everything. Sunday practice and today's practice went really well. Throwing wise, felt a lot more on point and everything, just getting back to fine tuning.
Sure. I'm sure Sean was upset with himself for not catching that one pass on the last drive.
Mm-hmm.
Did he talk to you about that at all? Was he like, my bad? Or
on which one?
The one that was like a seam route. I think it was the first down play on the last drive.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
A little bit behind him.
Yeah. You know, trying to fit into a tight hole. I think the defender got a hand on it, but you know, I could have put it a little bit higher and put it right in his chest and let him catch and run with it. You know, there's a lot of things you can do. Football's a game of inches, and you miss one of those by that much, and it could affect the whole play.
Last thing, when you see J.J. Taylor making that cutback on that one run, like, what's going through your mind?
I don't even know which one you're talking about. He made a few cutbacks.
Well, that was the one, the 27-yarder. He was a pitch to the left, and then he stopped and came all the way back to the right.
Is that the one I went and tried to block? There was one of them I went back and tried to block. I don't really remember, but
but when he does that in general?
When he does that, you know, he's just trying to create a play. Whatever I can do, you know, one play he cut back, and I had a chance to go out and try and lead the way and block for him a little bit. So, I mean, I give everything I got to on any play. You know, I'm not going to sit back and let him just, you know, do whatever he's got to do. But whenever I see him making moves, I trust his vision and whatever he's seeing, you know, then I'm trying to do whatever I can to help out. So if he makes that cutback and wants to, you know, make a play, then I'm all for it.
Thanks.
All right, that was Michael chatting with Brandon Dawkins. Thanks for listening this week. To listen to all of our future podcasts, which come out Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you can subscribe at the Apple Podcast app on your iPhone or Google Play on your non-iPhone, or you can download the Wildcaster app. Thanks for listening, and tune back in on Monday.